Chapter 2. Two kinds of dispensation, two kinds of law. Somewhere. Jacob Boehmer says that God has closed the universe of sin and has thus made a separation between love and wrath. This means that in our world of wrath, two magnetic systems are active: the magnetic system of the world of wrath, the nature of death, dialectics, and the magnetic system of God, the gnosis. In the philosophy of Jacob Boehmer, a sharp distinction is also made between the immovable kingdom and the ordinary nature field known to us. However, the Gnostic magnetic field directs the dialectical magnetic field. Imagine the dialectical nature to be a closed space which is entirely surrounded by the gnosis. Then you have an approximate image of the reality. The Gnostic magnetic field directs the dialectical magnetic field. To practice obedience to God, to be God-fearing, to be religious, are terms to be found abundantly in the holy language. They intend to tell us that there are two aspects of religiousness. It may be that a man in the midst of the world of wrath is able to place himself in direct contact with the Gnostic radiation field. However, it is also possible that he associates himself entirely with dialectics. In that case, the gnosis rules him all the same. But through dialectics, with the aid of dialectics, we can react positively to the Gnostic field, turn to that field completely, or we can turn in a positive way to the dialectical magnetic field. Also, in the latter case, the Gnostic field rules us just as it rules all of dialectics. But then, as has been said, the gnosis rules us through the dialectic field. The gnosis is a secondary factor. The nature state is the primary one. In the other case, the nature state becomes secondary and the gnosis primary. See these things in their true perspective and learn to understand that they are absolutely decisive for light or darkness, freedom or bondage, life or death, to be or not to be. The dialectical magnetic field from which we are and live is a field from which we can explain our entire state of being, our total consciousness. That entire field of wrath is, as has just been determined, directed and governed by the gnosis, by the other magnetic field. The gnosis has, as it were, enclosed the world of wrath. So the world of wrath lives in captivity by the gnosis. Thus one can say the world of wrath is subordinated to the law. There is an awe-inspiring law which keeps the all-revelation of the nature of death within bounds. The whole dialectical field, including ourselves, is subordinated to that law. As to our natural being, we are governed. This intercosmic law has rules and regulations which are not, however, engraved in letters, but which are expressed in various electromagnetic relations and effects. And these undulations of an electromagnetic nature are continuously in movement, and they drag along the dialectic all-revelation in a sequence of periods. The all-revelation, mankind, you and we, cannot but follow. When it comes to the point, we cannot but react promptly. This all-revelation is subordinated to the law. God rules the world. Whoever testifies of that speaks exactly the truth. Although the all-revelation in the nature of death struggles to escape this natural law, it is out of the question that this can ever succeed. There is something in the world of wrath that does not belong to it. Just think of the entities who possess the rose of the heart. They struggle for freedom, usually in a negative way. There is a tremendous eye passion, a frightful self-maintenance, a longing to make this nature static, owing to which all sorts of tensions take place within the world of wrath, liable to provoke an explosion. But the universe is closed and is kept imprisoned by a law. When someone teaches and says, "Careful, do not act against the divine law, for whenever you do so, you will be punished," then he is completely right, not only from a natural religious point of view, but also from the scientific point of view, as one cannot oppose the electromagnetic directives that are governing us. This is a sad situation, for because of this, the All Revelation is actually deprived of the sense of life. If you are in prison, you cannot say, "This now is the sense of my life," for the sense of life is somewhere outside the prison. Therefore, when someone says, "Obey and do not act against the law," he only ascertains a given situation with regard to the prison in which we all are locked up. Otherwise stated, obey the law or violence will be done unto you. You know this saying, that now is religious duty. Obedience. Then the wheel of life turns smoothly, without too many difficulties. If not, then the rotations of the wheel will inexorably make you experience bondage by severance and violence in a real course of sorrow. There exists a form of religion which expresses itself in that way, entirely adapting itself to this reality and trying to comply completely with the intercosmic electromagnetic directives. Who can blame a person for being religious in this way? Yet we may add in the same breath that such religiosity is nothing more than obedience due to fright and fear. Therefore, this religion is without any love. It is very selfish, hard and cold, but also sometimes cheerful when in fact things go well for a man. Think, for instance, of the Book of Psalms. This book sometimes illustrates such religiosity. When difficulties are experienced, then it is the scourge of fate that incites to exceptional behavior. Then the cry of despair sounds, "Deliver me, O Lord, for the water has risen to my lips." The next moment, however, the psalmist rejoices when distress and agony have vanished. There is milk and honey in abundance. You know the childlike bustle of the prayer meeting when there are difficulties and the Thanksgiving service when all is well. This is the religiosity of ordinary, stone-hard nature. All of mankind is composed of beings who either conform to the law in this way or who struggle almost to death against that law. The latter group, driven by numerous instincts, struggles desperately in all sorts of vulgar and stupid or refined and intelligent ways to escape from it. The outcome of such resistance, and how can it be otherwise, is always violence, electromagnetic oppression, and an appalling misery which all of us have experienced from time to time. This represents dialectics full of wickedness and woe. Therefore, the most intelligent attitude is a religious acquiescence in the sense of accepting the actual situation. When we cannot escape such violence, which is so enormously powerful, and we are as insects in comparison, then the most sensible thing is to comply. Consequently, in the way the Ecclesiast puts it, listen well when you read the book of Ecclesiastes to the religious sense of it. The Ecclesiast says, all things are gloomy, all things are full of weariness, all things go as a rotation of a wheel, all things remain as they have been. The best thing one can do is to fear God and to accede, then it goes as well as it is possible in view of the proportions. That is the zenith of the religiosity of the Ecclesiast. Such religiosity is perfectly understandable. What else can one do on the horizontal level? But deeper reflection in the light of the Gnostic path makes us see clearly that this cannot, after all, be the sense of life. A coordination of conditions, of the utmost miserable conditions in prison, cannot be the sense of life. Therefore, we cannot stop at this type of religiosity by submitting in agony of terror to the violence of the law, crying, "O Lord, help me." How frightened men are of God. Have you ever noticed how terribly frightened people are of God in Orthodox circles? Generations have experienced, "Obey the law or violence will be done unto you." Moses, to mention only one, explained the law to us, the testament of dialectical necessities. Religiosity that conforms to this is consequently necessary duty. Any resistance against it, whether one calls it atheism, anti-religiousness, or something else, does not prevent one from having to submit to the law. Whether someone says, "I do not want to have anything to do with it," or whether he, with acquiescence, declares, "Here I am," is neither here nor there in respect to the grip of the law. All of us, without exception, in our course through ordinary life, are completely religious in such a sense that we must submit to the law. Moses, who has explained the law to us, is perfectly right. All others who have done this before and after him are also perfectly right. But we do not need to cling to it, for a New Testament is placed beside the Testament of dialectical necessities, beside the Old Testament that explains the law to us and tells us, obey the law or violence will be done unto you. It is the testament of the Gnostic possibilities. It neither is nor can be the sense of your life always to remain in prison. He who realizes this and who knows how to raise himself above the course of these requisites leaves at the same moment the religiosity of Moses and his followers, closes that Old Testament which is so perfectly true, and puts it away with a feeling and joyous cry of intense relief. He steps out of the world of wrath, out of dialectics, into the love world of the Gnosis, into the new life field. This possibility is open for everyone. Therefore, Jacob Boehm rightly says, God has seized in Christ the world of wrath to the very heart. Not to urge you on by violence. No, Christ seizes us to raise us into his world of love. You can only say goodbye to life under the law when you turn yourself over to the Gnosis. There are two general electromagnetic dispensations that interact. One can rightly point them out as the old dispensation and the new one, the Old Testament and the New Testament. They interact in such a way that the new dispensation directs the old one. That is why Christ seizes the world of wrath, among other things, to protect as well as possible that world of wrath and all its entities from themselves. According to modern views, locking up a person in prison is not meant to be so much a punishment as a means of protecting the person in question from himself and of educating him as much as possible. This would be excellent if in practice it were indeed possible. Anyway, owing to the Christ activity, the Gnosis protects the world of wrath from itself, and at the same time, it prevents the world of wrath from extensively poisoning the Logos, the all-revelation. We can take leave of the dispensation under the law by turning to the new, directing dispensation. Therefore, in the beginning of the Gospel of John, we read, but to all who receive him, he gives power to become again children of God. When you carry out this reversal, you immediately grasp a new form of religiousness. The world has only apparently grasped this new religiousness, for you will see that if we remain what we always have been, only talking of Christ from time to time, celebrating Christmas and Easter, only talking of those well-known things mentioned in the New Testament, we do not progress any further. New religiousness is a practice, just as your religiousness, according to the Old Testament, has always been a practice. For under the old dispensation you must obey. Otherwise you will experience, obey the law, or violence will be done unto you. Forced obedience, obedience out of inexorable necessity, that is the religiousness of this nature. So this is a life practice, an attitude of life you must apply from early morning till late at night, according to special rules. Well, similarly and absolutely yet full of insight and gay, spontaneous voluntariness, the New Testament must be experienced as a self-evident attitude of life. Only then are you religious in a new and true way. This is an attitude of life that must reveal itself at every second. It is the attitude of life of the fourth Gnosis. It means a complete farewell to the old form of religiousness to which you were compelled according to nature. Now, a man can claim to confess the new form of religiousness without this actually being the case. When we claim this but do not put it into practice, we are still completely under the law of the old religiousness. Therefore, the practice of dialectics in its entirety, even using and misusing Christ's name, still stands completely in the phase of the Old Testament in the house of bondage under the law. In this way, one cannot enter the house of service of the love of God, the temple of the gnosis. It is not important what you say, but what you do. The issue is action, the fourth gnosis, the gnosis of the new attitude of life. When we explain this, everyone who turns his steps towards the path is heartily willing to accept this truth in its general sense. Many have given evidence of it through their pupilship of the modern spiritual school. But this truth has now been given a very special meaning and accordingly must be taken out of its generality and experienced in an individual way. For what is generally true and confessed as such by the pupils of the modern spiritual school and, consequently, approached by them, should now take practical form in each one of us. This is possible if all of us have become conscious of the necessity of it, for a state of consciousness is a state of life. For we have entered a new period, to be precise, on the 20th of August 1953, according to the chronology of the Great Pyramid of Gizeh. On that day, the new period began, and it will last till December of the year 2001. Therefore, it covers a period of 48 years, the second half of this 20th century, and embraces four generations: ourselves, our children, our grandchildren, and their first offspring. In this period of 48 years, the modern spiritual school will develop its greatest strength, and in and through its group of pupils, it must receive an entirely different character. If at this moment you could glance at the modern spiritual school of 25 to 30 years in the future, you would throw up your hands in amazement. The situation of that time could not possibly be compared with the present one. Three of the generations mentioned are already active, the two generations of pupils, and the present generation in our youth activities. Therefore, all of us ought to reflect seriously on everything this new and very short period requires of us and has made or makes possible in us. If all these things are vibrating in your consciousness, you can immediately begin to realize them, because a state of consciousness is a state of life. The guiding electromagnetic gnosis, as the law of God, leads the dialectic all revelation from period to period, so that what is lost will enter into the original house of the Father, so that the prisoners may regain their freedom. In the period we have now entered, and which began on the 20th of August 1953 in the external world, and will last 48 years, new Gnostic possibilities can be applied. In the period which lies behind us, these possibilities were freed. We have received them, and they can now be put into practice. The period in which these possibilities were freed was between September 1936 and the 20th of August 1953, and thus lasted exactly 17 years. It was called by the pyramid philosophers the period of the King's Chamber. In these 17 years, the modern spiritual school prepared its work and gave it form. During this period, it assimilated the Gnostic building materials, it has started its work and prepared itself. In June 1953, the modern body of the spiritual school was completely prepared, and on the 20th of August 1953, it appeared clearly before the world. In the coming 48 years, everything must be put into practice. Naturally, those who remain under the law will go the ways established by the law, for the law demands obedience. But those who go to meet the gnosis will enter into renewal, provided they now start to apply the liberated forces and possibilities. You should not postpone this for 24 hours. Do not start from the idea, "I shall begin next week." No, from this moment on, do live in the living present. The liberated possibilities can and must be applied now. If there is no consciousness of the new possibilities within you, then alas, you are still completely in the old dispensation. However, if you are indeed conscious, then these new possibilities will come to light in you. Then you will walk with us out of the house of bondage into the sacred halls of the new departing brotherhood. For a state of consciousness is a state of life. That which is in you as a result of consciousness must reveal itself. We invite you all to transform with us the new state of consciousness into a new state of life. From this moment on, the modern spiritual school appears in an entirely different form.